Actual Fluency Podcast, episode 24, featuring Mr. Simon Ager from Omnigot, and a new intro. Are you thinking about starting your own language learning website? Then check out HostGator. Use the coupon code ACTUALFLUENCY to get you your first month for just 1 cent. Get started by going to actualfluency.com/HostGator. Do you like audiobooks? Well, then Audible is for you. If you go to actualfluency.com/book, you can choose a free audiobook from a selection of 150,000 titles.
Welcome to the Actual Fluency Podcast, the podcast that gives you the tools and inspiration to learn languages faster and more efficiently. And now your host, Chris Broholm.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 24 of the Actual Fluency Podcast. I'm glad to be back once again, bringing you more language learning goodness, tips, and inspiration. And this week we have the accomplished language learner and founder of Omnigot, which you've probably heard of, Simon on the show, Simon Ager. And Simon and I have a very interesting talk about learning languages, particularly the more obscure languages, as Simon has been diving into those a lot. And that was a very interesting interview with lots of practical tips. So that's coming up in just a minute. I just like to take a second to thank all of you for listening. And, you know, it means the world to me that you listen in, tune in. And a lot of you have been emailing me lately, thanking me for the episodes. And, you know, that means a lot to me. So if you feel like writing to me, I read every single email or comment, or, you know, even if you send a message on Facebook, I'll definitely read it. So I just want to thank you for being a great audience. I mean, you guys motivate me to do this every week, trying to find awesome language learners that can help me and you to progress better and, you know, just learn those languages more efficiently. I just wanted to mention a quick thing that's been going on over on Actual Fluency, the website, which is also the home of my blog, and that is that I recently added a email newsletter, which, you know, I kind of needed. Well, I don't know if I needed it, but what I really enjoyed was that with the newsletter, I could write very philosophical and hopefully helpful emails that can kind of go to you privately. So, you know, it's like an extra way for me to give you extra great content. So if you want to sign up for that, there's a form in the right-hand side of the bar. You can also find it in the resource list and the about page. I'm sure I put a ton of links to it anyway, but the point is just if you'd like to sign up for that, that would be great because I can keep you updated. And every time there's something cool going on, you know, I can send you a little message and you will stay in the loop. Also, just wanted to let you know that if you have any interesting guest suggestions for the podcast, you're more than welcome to send me a message on the contact me page on actualfluency.com. Or if you indeed have an interesting language learning story of your own, you know, you don't need to be called Benny Lewis or Richard Simkin to come on the podcast, although I do definitely enjoy interviewing or having interviewed those people. But I mean, as long as you have anything interesting to share, or you feel like you have some kind of unique spin, or maybe you've discovered something really cool that, you know, not every single blog about language learning talks about, then send me an email and I'd love to hear from you. You know, particularly the most inspiring and interesting stories right now are people who have learned quite a few languages. So, but don't let that, you know, don't let that discourage you. There's always, you know, I find that for me, you know, I'm not a 10-language polyglot or anything. I mean, I'd like to get there eventually, but I know that I'm a bit more casual. So hearing from people who are maybe, you know, 5-language polyglots or 6-language polyglots is something that, for me, is very helpful. I mean, it's wonderful to hear from people like Benny or Luca or Richard Simcoe or those people once in a while. But also sometimes it's quite nice to hear from people who are closer to one's own situation. So that's why you shouldn't be discouraged, even if you speak, you know, even if you don't speak, you know, a million languages. So don't worry about that. But now it's time for the interview with Mr. Simon Ager, and I wish you a happy Friday, or whatever day you're listening to this. Hope you have a good day. I'll see you for the next one. All right, today I have the incredible privilege of having onto the show none other than Mr. Simon Ager, the founder of Omnigot. Simon has been learning languages for many years and now speaks an amazing number to varying degrees. So, hey Simon, how are you doing today?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good, really good, and good to hear it. I really appreciate you taking the time today to come and share your story and some wisdom along the way. But before we get to all that good stuff, can you maybe give a little introduction to yourself for those who might have heard of you? How do you get started with all this language business?
Okay. Well, I grew up in Lancashire in the northwest of England, and my native language is English. I started learning foreign languages at secondary school from the age of 11. My first language was French, and then the following year I started on German, just because those were the languages that were available in my school. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed learning them. I found them relatively easy, and I had a vague idea that maybe one day I could maybe work abroad. So I thought I should carry on studying them, and then I continued studying them until I was 18. And I thought, I should study them at university as well. And initially I was thinking, I should do European languages. That's what I've done already. And I got a place to study German and Swedish at the University in Wales. But then I thought again, and I thought, maybe it would be more interesting to do more exotic languages, mm-hmm. so many people study. So I thought about Chinese and Japanese and Arabic and Russian and various other ones, and I chose Chinese and applied for a course in Leeds University. And they said, hey, we're doing a new course in Chinese and Japanese. Would you like to try that? And I said, okay.
That's cool.
I'm not sure if that was a good move, because learning two quite challenging languages from scratch was very difficult.
Right.
But it is possible. You have to work very hard.
Right.
And then after university, I went to Taiwan. I got a scholarship to study another year of Chinese. I stayed there, got a job with the British Council, worked there for another 4 years, became fluent in Mandarin, and picked up basic Taiwanese and Cantonese from friends there. And then I came back to the UK, tried to set up my own business as a web designer and translator. I kind of picked up web design while I was in Taiwan, so I thought, yeah, I could do that. That didn't really work out, but Omniglot grew out of that. Oh. So I eventually got a job as a web designer in Study Group International, a kind of international education provider in Brighton, near London. And I was there for 9 years building websites in many different languages. So my linguistic skills came in very handy there.
Oh, cool.
And while I was there, I was working on Omniglot in my spare time. And after 9 years there, I was making enough from Omniglot to live on.
Oh, fantastic.
And the study group decided they didn't need me anymore, so they made me redundant, which gave me quite a nice payoff, which I used to do an MA in linguistics in Bangor University. I chose Bangor because the course sounded interesting and because I wanted to be in a Welsh-speaking environment, because while I'd been in Brighton, I taught myself Welsh, something I'd wanted to do for a long time because my mother's family come from Wales, although she doesn't speak Welsh. Mm-hmm. Hasn't been spoken in the family for several generations, but I thought, I really want to learn it. So I did. And I've been in Bangor ever since, living off Omniglot.
Fantastic, and obviously adding a lot of languages along the way.
Well, yes, indeed. yes.
I saw your list on the website. That's probably the easiest reference to give people, but just an extraordinary list of languages there. And obviously Omniglot, I don't think there's anyone in the community who hasn't heard of it. But if somebody who might have listened to this out of pure random, we can just say that. I mean, how would you describe Omniglot in, if you had like 20 seconds?
It's a online encyclopedia of languages and writing systems, which you can use to learn about languages and to learn the basics of languages. Learn phrases, numbers, and all sorts of stuff like that.
There you go. That's perfect. I used the Danish ones for the iTalki tutoring I did for Danish in last month.
Yeah.
Because the basic sentences are really good to kind of get started for complete beginners to say, hey, what's your name and where are you from?
Yeah,
so
that's why they're there. Yeah.
Excellent. And of course, you know, Welsh is, they would call it a minority language.
Yes.
And it, there's a lot of, obviously, controversy and is it dying and everything. Well, and you had the family kind of involvement there for you to be more motivated. And I've seen you've studied a lot of other interesting, obscure languages. What do you think attracts you to Welsh on a more personal level?
Well, it's mainly the family connection that got me interested in it. And I started listening to Welsh music when I was at school as well and really liked the sound of it. And I liked singing, so I thought I could learn those songs.
Right.
And learn what the words mean, which is how I got into the other Celtic languages as well, particularly Irish and Scottish Gaelic. I listened to music for a long time before I started learning the languages and wanted to learn the songs, initially just to learn how to pronounce the words and learn what they meant. But then I got into the languages as well.
Right. That's cool. Do you believe in this passive period is beneficial to studying a language?
Well, it depends how you define it. I mean, I've seen some examples of people who've done nothing but listen or watch movies or videos in the language for a whole year and then try and speak it.
Right.
Extreme examples.
That's
I don't think that's a very good way to do it.
But listening for a few months maybe and then you're going into studying it and maybe not just expecting to speak it is possibly beneficial.
I think listening is always beneficial, whatever stage you are in your language learning journey. I don't know if it's beneficial to listen only at first and then only start speaking after a certain period of time, or whether to just try and use whatever you learn as soon as you can.
Right.
I don't know. It depends on what opportunities you have to use the language, how confident you are, and what you want to do with it. I mean, some people learn a language so they can understand the written form or the spoken form, and they're not so interested in actually speaking it or writing it. So it depends on your own goals.
Right. All right. And of course, we met briefly in Berlin, obviously with 220 people. It's hard to get around to everyone and have a long conversation, but I was glad to just put a face to the Omniglot website. And your talk, of course, was on language preservation and survival. An incredibly interesting topic and very, I would say, very trending right now. People are talking a lot about it. Can you give people sort of the cliff notes, I would say, of why should we learn a minority language or even revive extinct ones?
Well, if you live in an area where a minority language is spoken, then it's certainly worth learning it. I live in North Wales, where Welsh is still fairly strong. In Bangor, where I live, about half the people speak it, and in the surrounding area, about 80 or 90%. So it's a useful language to know in this area, especially if you want to have a job in local government or in other kinds of businesses. In other areas, maybe you have an interest in a culture or language from the other side of the world. For example, you may, you know, really like Hawaiian music. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter where you live, and you decide you want to learn Hawaiian songs, and then you learn the language. So the interest can come from all sorts of different angles. And why should you bother? Because these languages, in a practical kind of pragmatic kind of way, there's no real need to learn them, essentially. But it's a matter more of interest, identity. Maybe your grandparents or some of a relative spoke the language in the past, like me for Welsh, mm-hmm. or you have a partner who comes from that linguistic background, or, you know, there's all sorts of reasons why you might choose to learn one of these languages. And each language is a different way of looking at the world, of describing it, of perceiving it even. So when a language is lost, if it's not documented, then that vision of the world is lost.
Right.
And that's a great loss to humanity. So that's another reason why it's worth at least documenting these languages, if not learning them to actually use them.
Right.
And,
It's a big question.
It is, yes.
But so obviously the thing that people might say, and you touched on this with the practicality, and I guess the kind of the discussion that's going around is like, well, why should I spend my time learning a language that's probably dying anyway? You know, if you don't have any personal direct connection to it, and you have any interest in the music, then it seems like charity, in a sense.
Well, yeah, yes. In that case, maybe it's not for you then.
Right.
Because I think if you have the motivation, because you're interested in the culture of the speakers, or some aspect of, about the country where it's spoken, the region where it's spoken, or something like that, then it's worth learning a language. If you're not interested, and you're doing it purely for linguistic reasons, you think, oh, I should preserve this language because it's dying out, and you don't have any other reason to learn it, then your motivation is not sufficient, really, I don't think.
Right. Yeah, I would tend to agree on that. But maybe we could lift up the tone a little bit of seriousness and go on to... You've learned a lot of, I would say, obscure languages to quite high degrees as well. Can you share any kind of interesting like discoveries or experiences you had in those languages that where you were like, wow, this is really interesting or fun or cool?
Well, in the Celtic languages, when you're talking about owning, having things, there's no verb to have except in Breton. So you don't say, I have a car. You say, a car is at me.
Right.
By me or with me.
So like Russian.
Yeah.
That's funny.
So that's an interesting structure. And you don't say you have a cold. You say a cold is upon you. That kind of thing. I really like that sort of idea. Or you can say there is a novel in me. I mean, you might say that in English.
Sure. People would look twice, I think.
Yeah, probably. And there's no exact equivalence of yes or no. So when you answer a question... You can't say yes or no. You have to reflect the verb that's used.
Oh wow! So
if I say, are you going to the cafe? The answer would be I'm going or I'm not going.
Right. That's interesting. I would assume that yes and no would be some of the first things in a language because somebody's pointing at someone, something, or someone.
Yeah.
And you'd say either positive or negative.
Yeah.
But it's interesting.
But if you listen to, say, Irish people speaking English, often they'll avoid using yes or no when they answer questions. This is a carryover from Irish.
That's very interesting, actually.
Yeah.
So they'll just repeat the verb or put in a not or...
Yeah.
Wow.
So are you doing something? I am, I'm not, or... Yeah. Did you see? I did. I saw. I didn't.
Well, that's interesting. People might just, you put this idea in their head. They might go, and if they have Irish friends or or in an Irish community, they might just notice it clear as day now. That's funny. Sure. Sadly, no Irish people around here. But if you do live in England or Ireland, you can find some.
Another reason why you might want to learn a minority or an endangered language is because the communities are small. It's easier to become part of them if they're willing to welcome outsiders. Mm-hmm. In some cases, they may not be so happy about that, but in the ones I've learned, I've kind of become part of the community, particularly in the Isle of Man, where there's only a very small number of Manx speakers.
Right.
And I know quite a large proportion of them.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. I suppose when a lot of cultures have that way, when you learn their language and it's a very rare language, then a lot of them might say, yeah, please, what's your name? Do you want tea and biscuits? But I suppose it does happen that some people are maybe protective of their community as well and saying, we're a little group here.
Or for Icelandic, I think, it's a small community, about 300,000 people. So any foreigner who learns Icelandic, is a is unusual, really.
Yeah.
And they're welcomed if they manage to do that.
Yeah. It's a hard language, but interestingly enough, with my ability in Danish as my native language and a little bit of Swedish and Norwegian, I can actually read some of the Icelandic just because of, I guess, crossovers and cognates and things like that. But it's funny, it's like a phonetic resemblance. It's not word. I don't recognize the words. I just read it out and then recognize the meaning.
Yeah, interesting, yes.
It's a really cool. It looks really cool.
I try and read Scots.
Mm-hmm.
It's if you have to read it aloud to make sense of it.
I love that kind of thing.
Yeah. It's like when you read kind of literature written in dialects of English.
Yeah.
For example, the novels that the Forrest Gump film was based on, they're written in kind of Southern Alabama style English, and you have to read them aloud to make sense of them.
Oh yeah, that I've heard of that as well. Yeah, it's like a dialect, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's like a corruption of a few languages.
Well, it's designed to be, you know, how people speak there. It's just to try to give you a flavor of that.
Yeah, maybe that would be more phonetic than normal English, which, you know, you don't know how to say an English word based on the how it's spelled, so maybe they have a bigger advantage there.
Yeah but if you're not used to that, then it takes a little while to kind of make sense.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that was amazing. We had a lot of talk about sort of philosophical topics, I would call it, but people on the podcast really love to be motivated by practical tips and advice as well. So I'd like to ask you, if you had to learn a new language tomorrow and had to be completely unknown to you, you can't know anything up front, what kind of materials or mediums would you seek out, and how would you sort of go about doing that these days?
Well, I'd probably first look for online courses, if there's any available, and see what might work for me, whatever is available. And then see if there's any online radio stations I can listen to tune my ears into the sounds of the language. I always do that. That's whenever I'm learning a new language, I'll spend a lot of time listening to it at the same time as I'm studying it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll see if there's anybody around in my local area or online who I can speak to.
Right.
So yeah, that's kind of how I'd go about it.
So you're much more in the speak it quickly or soon camp, and try to develop a natural kind of speaking language. You don't necessarily work towards reading first or listening to music first, maybe.
Well, I kind of work on listening and speaking as my main priorities.
Right.
And then maybe reading and writing if I decide to go into more depth.
Right. What made you go into, or what kind of decisions did you do to go in more depth with some of your languages? Because obviously you're, you know, if you studied at a university and you went to the country, like you're Chinese, that happens by itself. But I assume that you have languages that you've taken to quite high levels without living in the language.
Well, yes, yeah, so I've done that with Welsh and Irish, and to a lesser extent with Spanish, for various reasons. For Welsh, there's the family connection and the interest in the language, and I want to read Welsh language literature as well. And similar with Irish, I don't have a family connection there, but I have a similar interest in the literature. With Spanish, I'd like to read stuff I've read in translation in the original. I suppose often it's literature that kind of attracts me to a language, and wanting to read that in the original.
At the higher levels of fluency or
ability. Yeah.
That would be to read the literary works, which obviously, you know, most of the big literary works are quite complicated in terms of language.
Well, indeed, yes.
So that's why you would need to take a lot of work. And I suppose it's the 80-20 rule that, you know, it's going to a basic conversational fluency doesn't take that much effort, but going to, you know, up to reading some of the big authors, that's, I guess that's a full-time job.
If you're going. Well, yeah, it could be, yeah. But I read a lot. And when I'm reading in foreign languages, I tend to read aloud, which is, I find, a very good way to practice both reading and listening at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
If I find an audiobook version of the book, then I'll listen to it and then read it. And
So you're also practicing pronunciation even though you're only reading?
Yeah.
In a sense.
And sometimes when I'm reading in one language, I'll be translating what I'm reading into another language, maybe not English.
Wow. That's incredible.
So one time I was reading an Irish book and I was translating it into Welsh as I went along.
Wow.
Just as an exercise to see if I could do it.
Yeah, I've heard other people do that who are extremely successful, and maybe it's something that needs to be explored a bit more beyond just the idea of it. Maybe go and try it. More people should try it. Just do the mental exercising.
Mm. Yeah, it's a useful thing to do, I find, and it's quite fun as well.
Yeah, and maybe if people have any aspirations of becoming translators or interpreters, then you're already doing the practice there.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great. So a big problem that people have as well is motivation. And even if you have the best reasons, like if it's like you with your family, that you had a family history for the language, people still struggle with motivational issues and humps and plateaus and, you know, giving up. Do you have any kind of tips to increase motivation when maybe you're not feeling up to the task or?
Well, yeah, I have all those problems as well. So, what I try to do, if I'm finding one particular book or website or whatever I'm using is getting a bit tedious, then I'll try something else and try and find ways to make what I'm learning interesting and fun. So if I'm learning particular grammar points, you know, what I like to do is play with language and write silly songs. So I haven't done it so much in languages other than English, but that's what I want to do, is write silly songs in languages I'm learning.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of taking simple sentences from textbooks and then playing with them and changing the nouns and putting in different verbs and changing the tenses and just seeing what happens.
Right. Kind of experimenting.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. And do you find that your musical interest is making pronunciation practice easier or maybe you get better at pronunciation faster?
I think there's definitely a link there. I hear the sounds of different languages, I think, better than someone without the musical talents, perhaps.
Right.
And I'm quite good at reproducing them as well. Like last week I was in Scotland doing a course in Scottish Gaelic songs. And or maybe more than half the class didn't have any knowledge of Scottish Gaelic. So they were really struggling with the pronunciation.
Right.
I mean, the spelling and pronunciation Gaelic doesn't seem to be linked if you don't know the system.
Right. So it's hard to start with.
It can be learned. There is a system. But it does take a while to get used to it.
Right.
And when the teacher was saying some of the sounds, some of the people around me were saying, oh, I don't know what the sound that is. I can't hear it. I don't know what she's saying. But with my musical knowledge and also my phonetic training, which was part of my linguistics study, I find I know exactly what sounds are being made and how to reproduce them.
Right. So you could help the others then to...
I tried to, yes.
Tried. Well, that's all you can do, I suppose. You can't.
Yeah.
You can lead them to water, but you can't make them drink.
Indeed. Yes. Kind of explaining what the tongue is doing, and
and of course that helps. That must have. I don't know if you were much interested in music back when you were learning Chinese, but I suppose for tonal languages it's even better.
Well, yes, I think so. I mean, yeah, in tonal languages it's not about absolute pitch; it's a relative. But I think certainly being musical does help with such languages.
Right.
I wasn't as actively musical back then as I am now. I only played two instruments then. Now I have about 15.
Right. But you still had the interest, though, at least.
Oh, yes.
A lot of people are not interested in music at all, so
yeah.
You had a head start there.
Yeah, I think so.
Great. And I guess one last thing we should probably touch upon is you did an MA in linguistics.
Yes.
And I'm sure a lot of language learners out there, perhaps they're a little bit younger, are thinking about doing an MA start with a BA, I suppose, in linguistics. Is that something you can recommend if you have an interest in language learning, or do you kind of need a little bit of a little bit extra interest in the very fine aspects of language?
I think from a practical point of view, studying linguistics doesn't really help with language learning. I mean, some aspects of it can be useful, like phonetics and phonology, but generally it's not particularly focused on helping you to become a better language learner. But I'm fascinated by language as a phenomenon generally, so that's one reason why I chose to do linguistics.
Right.
And I also had a plan that I was going to become a speech and language therapist, and I thought I needed the background in linguistics before I did that. Mm-hmm. But after I finished my course, I realized I'm making a good living from Omniglot. I don't need a proper job.
Right. That's good. Well, I mean, you're kind of a language therapist now, I suppose. You're helping people learn languages instead of the speech.
Well, yes, in some ways, yes. And when people write to me saying, oh, your site's very useful, I used it to learn this language or whatever, then I think, wow, it really does help people and helps people to make connections and friends all over the world.
Yeah, and obviously there's the Facebook page as well, lots of debates and discussions going on where people are interacting and practicing and sharing ninja tips and tricks on how to become better.
Well, and also playing games.
Oh yeah, the word games as well, yeah. There's a lot going on. I mean, that's probably a full-time job to look after that group as well. But
well, there are a number of other admins on there now.
Right. There's a few people looking out for the group. I mean, I haven't seen any problems yet, so I can't imagine there would be any.
Generally, people are well behaved there.
Yeah, it's a nice community, I feel like, which we also saw in Berlin. Lots of nice people, and I'm just happy to be part of it.
Mm, yeah, I am. I mean, Berlin was the first time I kind of actually physically met most of the people.
Yeah,
you know, had to kind of read their blogs or seen their videos, so it was great.
Put some faces to the online personas, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know what I noticed? I noticed something really awesome, and that was that 99% of the people there were exactly like they were portrayed on the internet.
Well, yes. Well, people, they don't seem to kind of try and project a different image online. They're just as they are.
Yeah, exactly. Like when you have Benny Lewis walking in and you're like, wow, I've seen so many videos with that guy. And he's just Benny Lewis. That's, so awesome. But anyway, Simon, you and I, we could probably talk for days about languages or other philosophical topics. But, we both have other things to do as well. But I want to thank you so much for taking the time and sharing your story. It's very motivational. And thank you so much for providing the services of Omniglot and others.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
All right. Well, I'll see you soon. Hopefully in Berlin next year. Or...
Yeah.
That's a date, as they say.
Okay.
See you.
Okay. Hey, da.
Thank you for listening to the Actual Fluency Podcast. For more information, be sure to check out actualfluency.com. Until next time, enjoy learning and have a great day.